The free agent class at third base is surprisingly bad. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, November 11th. Happy Veterans Day to those of you who have served in your families. Our guy Christian is not here. He is former Navy. His wife is active duty Navy. They are taking the day while she is home from deployment. So thank you to Christian and his family for their service. Those of you watching who are military and, again, their families, thank you for your service and your sacrifice. I'm Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. And Troy, a lot of stuff over the weekend. No real signings, right? But still a lot of really interesting stuff about new managers. Miami has a new manager. A big free agent going to be added to the pool when Roky Sasaki. The Premier 12 tournament is going on. Arizona Fall League had their All-Star game. But I want to start with something that I don't quite think I realized until just this weekend, that this third base class, this free agent class at third base, is one of the worst position groups in all of free agency this year. We know center field is atrocious, right? Yeah. Your best bets are, you know, defense first guys and Harrison Bader and Michael A. Taylor, right? We know that shortstop has two top-tier options, and Willie Adames and Ha-Seong Kim, but it's very top-heavy. After that, there's nothing. But third base is Alex Bregman and virtually nothing. And I don't necessarily know if even Alex Bregman's as good as we think he is. Am I wrong in saying that this third base class is downright dreadful this offseason?
No, I think you're spot on, because like you said, it's Alex Bregman and the boys are Yoan Moncada, Jace Peterson, Giovanni Urshela, and Brian Anderson.
JD Davis is in there. Put some respect on his name.
Oh, but I do apologize. He's not on this list I'm looking at. So I do apologize to JD Davis. But like you said, Alex Bregman, he's a lot of people look at him as a star, but he really has not been a star since 2019. He was a star from when he debuted in 2016 through 2019, but since then he's played the majority of the games that the Astros have played, but he's really not been a really good hitter. His biggest ability right now is drawing more walks than he does strikes out, but he didn't even do that this year. And so he's not as big of a star as a lot of people think that he is.
Yeah, so to kind of recap some of the career arc there of Alex Bregman, 2018 and 2019, all-star years, but also top five MVP finishes. Yep. He batted .286 in 2018, led baseball with 51 doubles, hit 31 home runs, and then 2019 followed that up, leading baseball in WAR with 8.9, 41 homers, 112 RBI, batting .296, drew a league-leading 119 walks, was a silver slugger, was the runner-up for AL MVP. And you have to remember, 2019 was that juiced ball year for the home runs where the Minnesota Twins ended up setting a record, which has now been tied by the 23 Atlanta Braves. But since then, you know, he's batted around .260 in 22, 23, 24. His home run totals have been in the low to mid 20s. And like you said, his whole big thing was he would walk more than he struck out. This year was different. He only drew 44 walks. His slugging percentage was a little bit better, .453. But when you look at the profile of Alex Bregman and what he does, it feels like he really outperforms his expected stats. He's pulling a lot of his fly balls. He used to be in the 90%, right? Now he's down into the mid 70s, but it's something where he's not really, the exit velocity isn't stellar, right? He's not crushing the ball. His average exit velocity is literally 51st percentile. He's not really adding a lot of value running the bases. You know, he's never really had a lot of steals. He is a smart, but he's not a very exceptionally quick base runner. He's not adding extra value there. And defensively, he just won a gold glove. He is a good, like, fundamentally sound third baseman defensively, but his arm is pretty weak. He's in the bottom quartile in baseball. It's like an average arm strength of 80 miles an hour. I think some of that is why you've seen the conversation this offseason about he's willing to move to second base if you need him to, which is wild to think a gold glove center, third baseman is going to move to second. It's not because of the overall defense. It's because of the arm strength. And it just feels like for Alex Bregman, he's that kind of fit of a high contact, low barrel guy. He can't really outperform his home run production he had in Houston because a lot of that was powered by pulling balls and specifically into the short porch of the Crawford boxes. So a lot of the predictions are like 5 years, 6 years, 160 million, 5 years, 140, things like that. Is the team that signs Alex Bregman in free agency going to end up being disappointed with the overall value they get in the deal by the end of it, knowing that he turns 31 right before next season starts?
I would say yes, especially if they do wind up giving him the projected contract that everybody expects him to get, because like you said, he's just, he's especially this season, he's been a product of the Crawford boxes in Minute Maid Park. And you, it's places like Baltimore, where they have extended their left field fence. He would not excel at all in, or a place like San Francisco. And it's just, he's not going to get that same production at a place that doesn't have a short left field porch like in Houston.
Yeah, it feels like there's not many ballparks that are suited to his game of pulling the ball heavily and, you know, getting fly balls to left field. He also has to get back to doing that because, again, he was in the 90% a couple years ago, and now he's down into the 70% on those pulled fly balls. But looking at some of the numbers here, in Miami, he'd have hit 19 home runs. In Baltimore, he'd have hit 14, kind of to your point you made there. For the Guardians, he'd have hit 18. This is if he played every game in that home ballpark. So, I mean, if he played every game in Houston, he'd have hit 31 instead of 26. Like, it is a half-and-half schedule here. But you can see where it feels like the teams that he might fit with either aren't going to be aggressive in free agency or have an answer there. Like, it feels like Boston and the ability to put a ball against the wall, you cannot be out. Like, you cannot be – it cannot be a fly ball out if it hits the wall.
Right.
And so you could see where, like, there could be a fit in Boston. But they've got Rafael Devers at third. They have Tristan Casas at first, so they're not going to move Devers to first for Bregman. Do they maybe sign Bregman and move him to second? It's a whole – it's an interesting conversation to have. But the rest of the class, I mean, the MLB.com listing of free agents by position only has seven names, right?
Yeah.
And obviously you can get a shortstop with a good enough arm and move them to third base. Willy Adames can play third base if you wanted to sign him. Ahmed Rosario can play third base if you want to sign him. It's just something where I think when we kind of look at this objectively, third base is weaker than almost any position except for center field. And I'd argue it's right up there with catcher. Although catcher at least has a couple other options, I feel like, that would be above average, right? Because you look at catcher, you can find, I think there's four guys on the market that all were two or more WAR last year, right? Kyle Higashioka, 2.9 WAR. Travis d'Arnaud was 2.5. Danny Jansen was 2.5. Gary Sanchez was 2. Whereas third base, it's Bregman. Obviously, he has a lot. But then outside of that, J.D. Davis, Juan Moncada, Gio Urshela, all of these guys just the last 2 years combined have not been worth 2 WAR. And so it's a bad place to be if you need a third baseman this offseason.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If you need a third baseman, you probably need to do what you said and look to a shortstop and transfer him over, because it's
make a trade, something.
Make a trade, yeah. One I thought of was just because, you know me, I'm always thinking about the Phillies. If the Phillies do trade Alec Bohm Alec Bregman would not be a bad fit there just because of the way that their park plays, but even still, the defensively, you're not getting that much of an improvement over Alec Bohm.
And the hard part is he can't play second base when Trey Turner's moved to second base because of not having the arm for short. Unless you put Trey Turner in center field, we'll see what happens there. I still think that that could be a decent option there. Play Edmundo Sosa at short, play Trey Turner in third in center, but that's a different show. Kind of moving on, sticking in that division though, right? Yeah. The Miami Marlins have hired Dodgers first base coach Clayton McCullough, per reports on Sunday. I don't believe the club has officially confirmed this yet, but turns 45 this year, spent 10 years with the Dodgers, obviously just won a World Series championship. He's been the first base coach the last 4 years. And the last two seasons, we've heard a lot of praise for McCullough from some pretty prominent guys. Mookie Betts chose McCullough to throw to him in the Home Run Derby in 2023, called him his favorite coach ever. Shohei Ohtani gave him credit for the stolen bases this season, talking about he's been in charge of the running game the last couple of years. And this is a guy who has never been a major league coach, but has been a manager in the minors. He spent 7 years managing the Blue Jays minor league system, had winning campaigns in six of those, and won multiple minor league division titles, reached the postseason in the minor leagues. Is this a good choice? And two, is this an upgrade for the organization off of Skip Schumacher, or was this something where Skip was never going to happen, so we have to kind of put that out of the judgment here?
Yeah, I don't think Skip needed to be at a team that's a lot closer to contending than the Marlins. I think that this is a good choice for the Marlins with his track record in the minor leagues, because it's going to work wonders with his already history of player development with the Marlins young roster and all of the prospects that they brought in at the trade deadline this year. So his history of that's going to work wonders. And I mean, you can't, even though Shohei Ohtani is probably the best player in Major League Baseball right now, Mookie Betts is probably if not the most respected player in baseball.
Most respected and well-rounded, I'd argue.
Yeah, and you really can't. If Mookie Betts has high praise for a guy, that's really all you need to know. If Mookie Betts has high praise for a guy, then he's gonna do pretty well. So I think it's a good signing or a good hire by the Marlins, and it's gonna be interesting to see how well he does develop their young players.
I think the biggest reason why I'm optimistic about this hiring is, you feel like they're going to all be on the same page, right? Before he became an on-field coach with the Dodgers with Dave Roberts, he worked as the minor league field coordinator. He worked with Gabe Kapler, who is now assistant GM of the Marlins. Kapler was director of player development while McCullough was minor league field coordinator. So they worked together. He also ran the alternate site in 2020. They were on the USC campus, is where the Dodgers had their alternate stuff there. And so this is something where it's kind of a baseball lifer. He just got a championship. So you have the cachet of being able to tell these young kids, hey, you know, yes, it was the Dodgers and all of their financial advantages and everything, but they had to develop a lot of young pitching to make it through this season. And he could come in and say, hey, here's what I've been able to do. Here's what I've been able to accomplish. And here's the lessons I can bring over. And for not really knowing a lot of the assistants who would make good managers, I think I still want to say that this, I'm not going to say a home run hire, because it's hard to say anybody's a home run hire short of somebody with a ton of experience like a David Ross or something. I even say that in jest. He doesn't have a ton of experience. He just has plenty of major league experience. But it feels like this is the right direction. When you see so many hires, We grab a catcher who just left the field and we stall him as a manager. Again, David Ross, Stephen Vogt in Cleveland, things like that. The other side of it is that baseball lifer, that coach who spent decades in the minor leagues developing players, bringing them up and letting them do this. This feels like the right kind of manager that you need. You don't need somebody who's close, who was recently in the majors, who can tell you, like, who can relate to what the veterans are feeling. You need somebody who's been spent a lot of time with young players and can help them acclimate to the majors. And I feel like this was as good of a hire as you probably could have had, which is obviously good, helpful, right?
Yeah, for sure. And it's a trend that's really been going on in the National League East of late with the Phillies with Rob Thompson and the Braves with their manager who shall not be named. And so it's right in line with that. And because both of those guys were also baseball lifers and worked their way up through the minor league systems for years and years and years. And so now
Carlos Mendoza too. I mean, Mendoza bided his time in the minors and as an assistant and things like that. So this is kind of a trend in this division.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just don't like talking about the Mets in general, but I do like this hire for the Marlins. I think it's going to work well for them and it's going to make the division even better than it already is.
Yeah. I still don't think I have the Marlins picked to finish anywhere besides fifth next year in the division. But I do have, between the influx of talent at the deadline of all of these prospects, between Peter Bendix and Gabe Kapler and their work they've been able to do in modernizing some of the processes and things like that, and then now this hire, I feel better than I did about their chances of getting back into wild card contention. I don't think they're going to win the division anytime soon, but wild card contention at the very least, given how we do have three wild cards now in each league. Kind of moving on a little bit, a guy that is going to be joining technically as a prospect, even though he probably shouldn't be. The Cibolotti Marines have officially confirmed that they are going to post 23-year-old Roki Sasaki to the major leagues this offseason. This is something he's considered one of the most talented pitchers in the world. Similar situation to Yoshinobu Yamamoto, obviously much younger, but throws a triple-digit fastball, can hit 100 miles an hour, has a splitter, has a slider, has been very, very accomplished in his short career in Japan. But there's a little bit of an interesting intrigue to this because unlike Yamamoto, because he's under the age of 25, he falls under traditional international amateur free agent rules. He can only sign a minor league contract. It will be for five seasons of minor league control, and he's limited to what is available in international amateur bonus pools, which are capped. You have top teams this year can spend $7 million. A lot of the larger market, higher spending teams have like 4.6. Some teams are in the middle based on revenue sharing and things like that. You can acquire some of this money. You can add up to 60% of your pool by trading for other teams' bonus pool money. But the caveat here is most teams have already spent their 2024 money because the signing period's January 15th to December 15th. If they wait to post him until next spring, until, you know, beginning of January or whatever, everybody has an opportunity with a new pool to make a signing. Given the fact the money doesn't matter, and it's all going to be on other stuff, team fit, development, reputation, all of that stuff, how likely is it that Roki Sasaki is a Los Angeles Dodger when the season starts?
I think it's pretty likely. He fits in well with that culture. They've shown that they have no propensity to avoiding going out and signing big name Japanese pitchers with, like you mentioned earlier, Yamamoto. And they also have Shohei Ohtani, who is the biggest star in the world. And
they were
Japanese.
In for Shota Imanaga. They didn't get him, but they were in for Shota Imanaga as well. I mean,
yeah. And so it's a really good team fit. And like we touched on earlier, they have really good player development. He is 23. So he's really, even as good as he is, he's still got a little ways to go before he's at his full potential. So it's it's a perfect fit with LA. I mean, everybody would hate to see it that's not an LA fan, but it is a perfect fit for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah, this is something where they have the most money left over in the 24 period. Obviously, again, you have the ability to make some trades and get some money here and there, but a lot of teams just have already used their money because you spend most of that in January when you sign the new class. This is something where he can't sign a long-term deal until after the 2025 season, but you can sign him, pay him, in essence, league minimum in 2024, or sorry, in 25 when he's actually on the roster, and then turn around and give him an extension after the season. It feels like the Dodgers do check a lot of boxes here, right? Simply because you're in a situation, like you said, they have the development, they have the reputation, they have the recent history of winning, the marketability in Japan. Although there is the caveat of, we don't know. It's entirely possible he wants to do his own thing. He wants to be something separate from those other guys and not be overshadowed by some of those players. Right. It does feel like the real loser here is his major league team, the Chivalada Marines, because the way the posting system works is the posting fee is somewhere, is usually around 20% of the total guaranteed value of the contract. So the Dodgers had to pay Yamamoto's posting team a $50 million fee to when they signed him, outside and separate of Yamamoto's contract. Now, that's not subject to luxury tax money. It's just extra money that they could spend. And they didn't have to spend that, pay that money to Shohei. They could pay it to Yamamoto or Yamamoto's team. But it does feel like that the Dodgers should be the favorite. I wouldn't rule out some other organizations, though. Apparently, the ability to play with Yu Darvish is a huge motivator for a lot of Japanese players. He's considered to be one of the country's greatest baseball players. So obviously the ability to go to San Diego and play with him is always something you have to consider. There are other teams that have histories of Japanese players, whether it's the Mariners and Ichiro Suzuki. The Cubs have done a lot of work to build a presence in the Pacific Rim. The Mets have done a lot of work there. A lot of that was the legwork trying to get Yamamoto. The Phillies have put in work trying to build an international presence. Hasn't really paid off in signings yet, but they've been working on that. And I believe it's more Korean players than Japanese players, but I believe the Pirates have done a lot of work building a Pacific Rim presence. So going to be interesting. I do think this is just another point on, we should probably have different eligibility rules for rookie of the year and things like that for players who are foreign professionals. Because Yamamoto, if had not been hurt, was the hands down favorite to win rookie of the year in the National League. Yep. Sasaki is probably also going to be one of the favorites to win rookie of the year. Despite the fact that I don't think he's as sure of a thing as everybody necessarily thinks. He had some velocity dips the last season or two, corresponded with some injuries he had. You know, he dealt with, I think it was an oblique and a shoulder and things like that. But I do think he is the ceiling's number one starter here. And that's just kind of frustrating for everybody else to think, oh yeah, that's, he's going to go to the Dodgers. If it's not the Dodgers, who do you want to put money on getting Roki Sasaki?
If it's not the Dodgers, I think that the next closest is probably going to be the Mets, because of their the fit that they have there with Kodai Senga. I think he would be a big drawing factor for Sasaki going to New York, and New York's pretty close to contending for a World Series. So if he wants to win and win now and not really toll away and help build a team to relevancy, then it'll probably be one of those two teams.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, so stick it on prospects. The Arizona Fall League had their Fall Stars game over the weekend. MVP was Tigers catcher Theron Loranzo. Hit the winning home run in the 6-5 victory for the American League. Did anybody in retrospect have a better trade deadline than the Detroit Tigers. When you just look at, they were able to move on from Jack Flaherty and still make the postseason, and they acquired some prospects. Now, Lorenzo was one of the guys they got. They also got shortstop Trey Sweeney. You saw them use Sweeney towards the end of the season in place of Javi Baez. Lorenzo obviously is the darling of the Arizona Fall League and looks like a potential catcher and first base option for them. In retrospect, did anybody have a better trade deadline than the Tigers?
No. Especially, like you said, especially with them turning around and making the postseason after having their massive sell-off. It's not something you see very often, where a team approaches the deadline with a record below 500, goes into a sell-off, selling off one of their biggest names on the roster in Jack Flaherty, among others, and then turns around and makes a run to the playoffs, and then advances past their first round of the playoffs with a sweep of the Houston Astros of all
the
teams.
Inevitable Houston Astros.
Yeah. Right. It's I'm right there with you. It's got to be the Tigers for best trade deadline this year.
There you go. Looking at some of the interesting injury news and updates, we've already talked about Shohei Ohtani having the shoulder surgery. There was another young Los Angeles player that had a shoulder surgery, Angels shortstop Zach Neto. He injured his shoulder in late September, sliding into a base against the White Sox. 23 years old, they kind of rushed him up a little bit, which is the Angels thing to do, right?
Yep.
But batted 249 last year. Remember, drafted in 22, was up in 23, but yeah, last season, second year in the majors, 249, 23 homers, 77 RBI. One of the few bright spots on that Angels team that just struggled to another losing record. It's possible he may not be ready for the start of the season. How big of a deal is this to the Angels, or are they projected to be bad enough where it doesn't necessarily matter?
It's probably not going to matter all that much. They're going to be a pretty rough team, because you can't, even though they have guys like Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon on the roster, also along with Neto, you can't expect a full season from Mike Trout anymore with what he's shown us over the past few years. Anthony Rendon has told us multiple times he doesn't want to play 162 games, so whether he's injured or not, he's probably not going to suit up for many of them. And they're going to be a bad team regardless, and they're in a pretty tough division. But not having Zach Neto will definitely add a few more losses to their loss column.
Yeah. Can I just – this is a little bit off topic here, but I was playing MLB The Show over the weekend, and in a pack I got as a reward for winning a game, I got an Anthony Rendon card. Ooh. Guess what his rating is on MLB The Show? Knowing that 99 is the highest you can possibly get. Guess what Anthony Rendon's rating is?
So I'm going to preface this. I played MLB The Show for many, many years. And I, over the past few years, ever really since Diamond Dynasty, I have had an issue with their ratings on a lot of players. I'm going to guess that he is a diamond, and he's probably an 88 or 89 overall.
He's a 63. It was I knew that Anthony Rendon obviously has not performed to the value of his contract.
Yeah.
But seeing that he was one of the lowest rated players on the roster absolutely blew my mind. His contact rating for righties is below 50. His his highest power is against lefties, and it's 45. It's just his fielding is barely, it's like 56. His durability is the funniest part. It's a 70. I have no idea where they're getting that from.
That is way too high.
But just absolutely blew my mind when I pulled it, because I knew that he wasn't going to be rated well. Right. I didn't know he was going to be a 63. And it just goes to show you like what kind of financial hole that this Angels team is in, because if you look at their payroll, they have a combined, I'm doing math in my head real quick, $75 million every season in Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon.
Wow.
And Trout is incredibly talented, but it can't stay on the field because of injuries recently, while Rendon is one, can't stay on the field, and also not that talented anymore. And it just goes to show you that for the next two seasons, because Rendon's not a free agent until 27, the next two seasons, it's going to be incredibly hard for this team to build a competitive roster with those two contracts as long as Trout's not able to stay healthy, because they've got almost $70 million in dead money on a payroll that as of right now is projected to be $170 million next year.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, that just goes to show you how strong recency bias is with a lot of teams. Cause while Rendon was good with the Nationals, a lot of his hype came in his contract year when he just played lights out. He played well above his head. And it's that recency bias that gets teams just all gung-ho over signing these guys like Taijuan Walker, who has good seasons in their contract year, and it just does not work out for the team after they sign him. And it's just Anthony Rendon. I do apologize to San Diego Studios. Good job on the Anthony Rendon rating. I like that. I might go buy the game now.
There you go. We're running out of time here, but just real quick, and this is on the spot. Troy doesn't know I'm doing this. What player in this free agency class do you see as the most likely to be in an Anthony Rendon situation in three seasons, four seasons? It's a hard question, and I apologize in advance for.
No, you're good. Honestly, not just because we talked about him earlier, but I have been kind of looking into this throughout his career. My wife's from Houston. I'm going to say Alex Bregman. A lot of teams, like we said, a lot of teams look at him a lot more highly than they should, and I could 100% see him being another Anthony Rendon, Taijuan Walker, Javi Baez type guy when it's all said and done.
Mine's going to be Pete Alonso. He has, obviously, like, only Aaron Judge has hit more home runs than Pete Alonso dating back to 2019, right? And they're the only two that are even anywhere remotely, you know, near everybody. Everybody else is way below them. Yeah. But, like, he's been durable. He has hit for power, but he hasn't really hit for average. He's been not good defensively. I think at best, you could argue DRS has him career average, right? Outs above average has him never positive, right? He's not been a great runner. He doesn't strike out a ton. He walks a little bit above average, but this just for some reason, and I know you'll appreciate this, or maybe you won't appreciate this, this just screams Ryan Howard to me. This screams like a situation where Pete Alonso could potentially just hit a wall. And when he does, he is going to become a massive albatross in his 30s. And if you sign him for, let's say, 5 years or 6 years, probably takes six to get him. If his defense and his speed is already this bad at age 29, what's going to happen when he's 34 or 35? Right. It kind of reminds me of the Angels, the Albert Pujols deal. It aged so poorly, and Pete Alonso feels like a guy that's going to happen to as well.
Yeah, no. I like that one a lot too, and I could 100% see that one happening too. So
this has been First Pitch for Monday, November 11th. Again, happy Veterans Day to those of you in the military and, you know, and your families. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. Also leave us a 5-star review with some comments. Does a great job of helping folks discover the show. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.